So next talk, I have the pleasure to introduce Ramon, who will be talking about closing the loop and self-learning compilers. I've read today that there is NVIDIA published AI generator to generate models, which is six times slower than the one written by people. So let's see if we can do a much better work with self-learning compilers for AI.
Let's see. Okay, hi. Okay. So my name is Ramon Wirsch. I represent Daisy Tuner, where I work as a compiler engineer, and I'll be presenting Closing the Loop, a self-learning compiler for AI accelerators. Okay. So I think it's pretty safe to say we live in the age of hardware accelerators. Barely a month goes by where there's not news about a new accelerator or even a new architecture. So what does that mean for the user? First, we have to choose what kind of accelerator would we want to target if we determine that we need acceleration. And then there's always the balance between portability and specialization. You can remain agnostic to the actual hardware accelerator, easily swap them out if you remain on the right side, but you'll probably sacrifice a lot of performance. And you can gain the best performance on the left side, but probably looking at vendor lock-in or API lock-in. So let's look at like an example stack. A user that comes with a portable system that hasn't used an accelerator before probably prove that it works on complex problems. And we still can here see that the balance between generality and specialization, if you want the best performance, you would write directly for the instruction set architecture of the accelerator. But the heart of this problem is the mapping. Here we can get all the performance or lose all the performance, but I'll get back to that later. First off, let's look at what we want to do. We want to build a toolbox that allows for optimized mapping between all sorts of different accelerators from basically any kind of input language or format. So let's look how we do with that. First off, the representation on which we think, so you get a better idea on which level we're tackling that mapping. So we call our representation structured data, stateful data flow multigraphs. Let's start out with a simple data flow graph. We have access nodes, which represent variables in this case. We have tasklets, which is the basic math operation, and we have the edges, which we call memlets. This would be a load, here would be a store operation. We can make this more complex. We can add dependent data flow underneath. Very simple, very easy to understand this format. We can add parallel execution in that graph. We can add offsets and operate on arrays instead of scalar variables. Still looks pretty simple. Then we can wrap this in a loop. In this case, it would be a map data parallel loop. And the memlets are now indirect accesses. And we can take this further, wrap it into more loops, and then we have a naive matmul implementation. And here the memlets are multidimensional accesses with types attached, technically. Yeah. We can take this one abstraction further and just represent a call. In this case, our memlet edges become just address calculations, no more memory access. And the call could be anything to other graphs, to external functions in some kind of other environment, or intrinsics, which are just well-known functions like gem that we could replace with the underlying code or just call something else. Okay. Then, lastly, we have conditional execution. It's also pretty simple, and you can chain all of these elements for larger programs. So to summarize, the format expresses data flow and control flow at the same time. It's structured. You can see the loops directly, so that makes it very convenient if you're talking about optimizing, transforming, changing loops. It's a lot more terse than other formats for this, and it's simpler and easier to analyze. What it doesn't allow is a regular control flow. So you cannot represent a program that contains just like branch hell. You need to simplify that, but we don't think it's a large problem because most pseudocode is structured and doesn't have that problem. So also, you might have noticed the address and condition calculations are in a different format than the data flow. Especially for parallel problems, this is very convenient. And the more separate they are, the more parallel the problem tends to be. Just take note. OK, so what are the elements that we have in our toolbox so far? So we have our SDFGs, APIs to build them. We have serialization. So far, it's just JSON. More to come. Then we have analysis passes, similar to compilers that operate on loops, data dependencies, and parallelism. And we have optimization passes that can optimize the loops, transform it to parallel execution, and so on. And right now, our output is C, C++ code generation. So this way, we are currently very agnostic of what comes behind it. Any C, C++ compiler could compile it to an architecture, just like what I showed in the stack graph. Okay. So in terms of front ends, right now, part of our library are Python bindings. So you can build those graphs from Python. And we also have a decorator. And let's look at an example. If we have this simple code, we can annotate it with our annotation. And when it executes, our library will pass that code, transform it into our graph representation. And if you let it do its default work, it will output C, C++ code, compile it, load it into the runtime again, and execute it. So it will just make simple Python code faster so far. But it's a good platform to experiment and look at what the representation does. So this would, for example, be our graph that then executes. Okay. We also are working on, I believe it's been pushed today into the Git. It's not really doing much so far, but more to come. A front end to ingest PyTorch models directly without having to go to Python code, and also working on ingesting MLIR graphs directly. On the target side, we have the generic host target, which basically uses the normal C, C++ code generation. So basically, if you want to execute it on the CPU, we have an OpenMP backend, which basically adds OpenMP annotations to the output code, so it runs on multiple cores. We use Google Highway for vectorization, so we can use that. And we also have a CUDA backend. So take a look at that. Okay, so for CUDA, so far we had normal code, linear code, runs on the CPU. Now we want to offload that. So we need to cut out a portion, and we need to generate code that runs on the device. We need to run the, generate the host code, and we need to generate memory management and transfers to the device and back. As a graph, this was, would look something like this in the middle, the same matmul graph from before, and just the memory transfers above and below it. And what we also added on top is optimizations around the data structures. So if you were to execute this twice, the second one on the results of the first, it would be a waste to transfer that data back to the host and back to the accelerator again. And we can just remove those transfers, similar with read-only data that has never changed. It can just remain on the device. And this optimization is also generic. It could apply to any accelerator that is modeled as a target for this library. Okay, so let's look at how well this works so far. This is NPBench, a popular Python benchmark, uses a few different backends, also with decorators, just as us. So they just in time replace the code that executes and measure the performance. And NumPy is the baseline on the bottom in milliseconds. And everything else is relative to NumPy. Green indicates a speed up, red indicates a slowdown. So these are just the frameworks that come with NPBench. And we run it on paper size. Okay, so this is baseline. We don't do any crazy optimizations yet. It's basically just cleaning up what we get from Python. And the C code we compile with Clang on O3. And you can see we are achieving some speed ups. There are a few gaps where we don't map all operations just yet. But we're actually pretty happy with how good that works. And if we enable OpenMP, it still works. Right now, we're not seeing that much speedups because it's annotation-based. So if it's just a library call that's emitted, the annotation won't actually do anything to parallelize it. And the CUDA backend works and can offload code that was not optimized for any GPU or anything. And we're also pretty happy that we're beating, in some cases, the QPy implementation already. Okay. So, but as I said in the intro, mapping is the heart of the problem. So how do we map something such as this to various accelerators? For example, here, NVIDIA CUDA architecture, which is actually pretty similar to a normal CPU in terms of memory topology and address space. It's one shared address space. Any processor can access any data. It just determines the speed at which it does it. Yeah. But we can also go crazy and, for example, look at a tensorrent architecture, which is just a mesh of many connected cores only to some of the neighbors. So here, if we wanted to get access to some data, we need to move that data through all those cores. We need to consider all the bottlenecks we created on the way on each core. And even if we get the data to its target, it's still not a normal core. It's still five cores that need to move and stream data around between the various accelerators. So the mapping is at its heart about parallelism on the different levels, CPU cores, threads, vectors. It's about the memory topology and locality. And it's about data movement. And you can also further do data format and precision, as we heard before. And if you do all of this right, you get a good performing kernel. Right now, the standard way to do this is to basically build a library of hard-coded or hand-optimized kernel from experts for a given accelerator. Very popular math functions, you can just build a library of a few of those and have good performance. The hardware agnostic way, there are already solutions to do this hardware agnostic way that automatically map this, but they don't get close in performance to the manual performance engineering. Okay, so to explain manual performance engineering, let's look at a short example. Again, the simple MATMUL application. And this would be the NVIDIA example how to run that fast in CUDA. And just to show you what goes into it, so here's code to initialize the hardware and allocate memory. We have data transfers to the accelerator because it's a separate memory. We have to match the exact hardware size we have. Here, this hides the two outer loops because the hardware manages those. Then this is where the code that runs on the actual accelerator starts. We allocate a new memory and prefetch data into that memory before we calculate on it. We prefetch in a different order to maximally utilize cache lines, so we fetch all the data linearly. We still accumulate in the existing order. We need to manage multiple threads that we didn't have before, and we're saving as a write into memory. So a lot of stuff, but also we can break this down as a collection of building blocks. Most of those optimizations are like textbook optimizations. They have parameters, you need to figure out on what to apply it and when, but it's basically building blocks. So if you are enough of an expert in the hardware, you can pick the standard textbook transformations, pick their parameters, pick on which parts of the algorithm you apply it to, and then the order of it. And then instead of looking at the complex kernel I showed on the right side, you can look at the basic pseudocode on the left side and a recipe that is specialized for the algorithm and the specific hardware. We'll get you the same result, but this way you can look at the base algorithm, and the recipe is what determines what hardware you can run it on. And as long as you get the recipe, it'll run anywhere as fast as it can. Okay, so an example for the recipe. Left the simple MATMUL code, and the transformation we're applying is loop tiling. So we're splitting up a loop into two. The outer loop will make bigger jumps, blocks of 32 in this case, and the inner loop will iterate over the elements sequentially as before. And we can do this to the outer loop as well. And then, for example, we could run loop interchange. We just swap two loops. They don't have their own code, so we can do that without affecting the innermost code. We get that, and why did we do this? Okay, now here we can see the green loops basically just operate on the rectangular on the right side, and the outer loops walk over the rest of the data. So what that gets us is very localized data, which, for example, could fit into a cache of one processor core. So basically, this is what we would run on the multiple cores, and the inner code is what would run on one of them cores to optimally parallelize something like this. And we can repeat the same concept on the inner loop to exploit vectorization, for example. Okay. But where do we get the fast recipe? We talked about how we can apply it, but not where we do actually get that. We have the building blocks. Okay, there is a standard solution for this. It's called auto-tuning. But what auto-tuning is basically just trying all the possibilities, spend a lot of time on it, and eventually you find the best performing solution for whatever performance target you had. This is takes a long time. It's infeasible to do this every time you want to compile something or build an application. So what we really want is we want to cache on a remote server that you don't have to see those results, the recipes. So once we have it, everybody can use the recipe without having to know anything about the accelerator. And as long as the recipe exists, you can switch the accelerator and gain the best performance for that hardware as well. Okay. So, but there are many accelerators, many different architectures. And even for the same architecture, the optimizations can change because there are micro-architectural implementations like cache sizes, which change how to get the best performance out of it. Okay. So what we want on top of the cache is similarity-based search. We don't just want to find the exact match. We want to find any algorithm that was similar on similar hardware and get you the recipe for this because it will get you similar performance on code we haven't seen before. This would look something like this, a database of similar algorithms, and we can port over the optimization recipes from a slightly different code. Okay, so we are using a neural network to classify the code, so to get the coordinates in that diagram. And we store for each point in the diagram the optimization recipe, the results we observed. And we can do that with multiple target architectures. And then you basically need a server farm to do auto-tuning nonstop for every architecture that you want to support to find the recipes for every code you know of. And this is self-learning. If you feed it new code, it can figure out how to optimize that. If you give it a new target architecture, a new accelerator, it can learn how to do that as well. Okay. To give you a preliminary showcase of how well that is working out, we're using Polybench. This is running our internal C++ LLVM front end. So we're running on C code instead of the Python I showed before. It shows the speed up of already vectorized code by us if we apply our transfer tuning to it. And the transfer tuning database we use is currently very limited because it's very fresh. Okay, same type of graph. As you can see, there are some benchmarks that profit by as much as factor 2 of the transfer tuning. And locally, it was not much work for the compiler to do this because somebody else already ran the auto-tuning and figured out what to do. But there are some outliers where we make it slower by a lot. We hope to fix that soon. Okay, so in terms of building blocks, we're adding also the remote optimization, and our public repository includes a demo server. It basically responds with preset responses of what to optimize for, because the server is not live yet in that way, but the client code is already there. And internally, as I mentioned, we are already working on doing that from C++ code directly and the transfer tuning database, but those are not that ready yet. And we hope to gain contributions for different accelerators if we don't get to them ourselves, and new front ends. And if you're curious and want to give it a try, these are repositories. The above one is the toolbox. And just yesterday, we published the Python project that does the transformation that I showed in the beginning. Well, thank you for your time.